The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
G'day everyone and welcome back to a third week of Australian Survivor Podcast. I'm your host, Nick Idanza. I'm here with the Know It Oz podcast to break down another great week of Australian Survivor. And I got a lot of great feedback on our podcast last week with Phoebe, and I thought I needed to bring in someone to try and top Phoebe. And I think I've done that. Sucked in Phoebe. I've got a better guest.
Yeah, sucked in Phoebe. The year queen's back in town.
There we go. Welcome, Sarah Talik. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on and chatting to us about Australian Survivor. The RHAP patrons are very excited that you're here.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm actually super excited to chat Survivor with you. I'm very excited. It's going to be a good podcast, I feel.
Sarah, we spoke last year. We got to do an exit interview that went for about 20 or so minutes, and we kind of raced through everything. I actually went back and like just listened to it on like 7x speed this morning on the way to work, just so I could kind of like catch up on what we spoke about.
And who is Sarah again? Have we chatted? Do we know each other?
And I think there was a lot of good stuff in there, and it's just got me really pumped to talk to you. You were someone who was high on my hit list because I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I would say that pound for pound, you were one of the best players, if not the best player of last year. And that's a tall order because last year had some pretty amazing players in it.
So it was pretty epic. And I have to say, like, not to be just a massive egomaniac, but I am proud when I read the comments and I see like people talking about season three, but they throw it back to season two and they say like, oh, but the gameplay, it was so good in season two. And I'm like, that does make me proud to be a part of that, because it felt pretty like epic to be part of a super amazing season. So thanks for that, Nick.
No, well, you should. Like, season two of Australian Survivor, so many people have said and spoken out and saying how amazing it was. There are a few people who are listening who have not yet watched it. I know that you're out there. You get in contact with me. I highly recommend that you check it out. It will be a really nice way to tide you over in the week before the new episodes come out, because there was some excellent stuff in there. And I would say that it's a top five season of all time. So
wow, that's a huge statement. But you know what? I will say for it, it definitely was entertaining. Like there was a lot of stuff.
There was a lot
of
stuff.
Pretty much in every episode.
Yeah.
Someone was doing something crazy every single episode, which made for a very entertaining Survivor watch.
For sure. And look, there will be a few spoilers throughout this. You know, Sarah will be drawing upon her experiences. So, you know, a lot of people hate spoilers, but yes, if you haven't watched that season, just beware. We may be mentioning what's coming up, what happened on season two. So, Sarah, before we dive in, just kind of catch us up. What have you been up to? Give us a download.
Since Survivor, oh my God. So, just basically, I pretty much went back to kind of normal life after Survivor, which was modeling and uni on the side. However, like, I felt like I was still very much within the world, because I obviously moved in with Annalise. I was kind of quietly seeing Henry on the side, you know, like I was kind of still very much involved in the Survivor world. And I feel like a year on, it's only just now kind of properly settling to totally back to normal life, which is actually quite nice. But I'll always be a Survivor fan, and I'll never not watch a season. So it's kind of just been like same old, same old.
There's something I think really important about anyone who goes out there to play Survivor. I highly recommend that you, when you come back, you start your job again straight away.
Because there's
nothing worse for you than going through that experience and not having that job to kind of fall back on. So well done there.
Oh, my God.
And I think it like part of the process is watching the season after, you know, occur. It really does kind of like move you from kind of still being in that mental bubble into sitting back and being a fan. So really keen to hear your thoughts on season three.
Yeah, and it's so a quick side note on that. It is actually funny because I am really close with last week's guest, the lesser of the two. but I'm actually really good friends with Phoebe, and I will continue to hack her because I felt like five hacks wasn't enough over 2 hours last pod. But
did she tell you about me hack going through her Instagram and just kind of like telling her which photos she needed to hack away?
Your friendship is very the banter in your friendship I love. But it's funny, like comparing the like. So she's a year on from me, like with her experience of it, and like it's just funny when you compare. Like I was super excited to see like a new season, and she was like, she kind of had the reaction of like, oh, here we go again, like round two, and I was like, it's just really funny comparing the pair.
Yeah. And let's be real, you're using her for to get to her dog, her Ollie the Border Collie. So it's okay. I mean, you can say it now.
100%. I'm also like trying to infiltrate the dog and make the dog feel like I'm not his auntie, but I'm his mum, and that Phoebe is actually his auntie. And I feel like it's a slow progress, but it's coming along.
So a bit of dog napping on the side. I like it.
Oh, 100%. I'll be running his Instagram account fully by next week.
I like it. Well, Sarah, let's dive into season three. Before we get to the specifics of what happened in these two awesome episodes, because there was a lot to unpack, what are your general thoughts on season three?
I agree with the general consensus that the gameplay is super slow. Like even like I was so in prep for today's podcast, I just quickly kind of watched the seasons, like the last two episodes again, and like kind of really only focused on like, okay, well, where's the strategy being talked about? And like, I'm not kidding you, it's like out of an hour and a half episode, maybe 20 minutes is like strategy talk out of the whole, out of each episode, and the rest is challenges and crying and emotional and friendship. And I'm just like, oh my God, like, please, like, let's fill this up with like some proper, like classical Survivor gameplay.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a bit slow, but at the same time, like I can't argue with why they're playing that way. Like when the cast isn't coming out the gates, like, you know, full speed, it would be stupid to be the only one to ramp up the gameplay. Yeah. Like they're kind of all reading each other. So I think the gameplay is still smart. I'm just like, hurry up. Like let's really start shaking those alliances up.
Well, look, anyone who has tried to do that went straight out the door with the first two boots. So I think that sent a very clear signal.
Totally.
So I want to dive in. You know, the biggest story this week is it's all about Benji. So
it is the emergence of Ben.
Yes, it's no longer Purple Ben. He did actually kind of like break Ben's record last season, of going, what was it, six episodes without a confessional.
Wow, the curse of Ben.
Yeah, you do not want to be a Ben on Australian Survivor. You will not speak for the first six episodes.
Yeah, I wonder, maybe the like head producers just are off the name Ben and like just they can't like it triggers them in some way.
An old ex-boyfriend or something like that.
Oh my God, that's totally 100% what it is. 100%. We've cracked the code of the curse.
Well, look, Benji is no longer purple. He is, other than that questionable little purple bruise under his eye, other than that.
Yes, I know. I was kind of like, where did that come from?
I heard online that Fenella stepped on him in the middle of the night and
She's probably okay. So I follow her on Instagram, and I'm loving watching her little dancing video highlights.
Yeah.
So I bet she was doing a little midnight boogie and just accidentally did a like foxtrot step too far and like landed on his face.
Well, she wasn't the only one doing some fancy dancing. How's that for a segue? Because Ben was trying to dance his way all through this tribe, and he tried to weave his magic. And we have this narrative, which kind of, it was a really nice pair of episodes that worked together. So Benji starts talking about how he needs to dethrone the queen. And I was like, what, Sandra's out there? Like, what do you mean? Like, so he tried to dethrone the queen, and he's talking about Tegan. Now, he said it a million times, but what did you think about this whole idea that Tegan and Heath, they are at the top of the pecking order and they need to be dethroned? Is that a narrative that you were excited to see occur?
Well, okay. So it's funny because last week I was saying that, like, I feel that middle power is a really good position to be in, except for, like, because basically you can kind of control the vote because you can jump from side to side. However, if, like, only an idiot, like, out there wouldn't see that as happening. So when they had Jenna, like, it was great because there was still three of them. So there was a lot of kind of power.
Yep.
Then Jenna goes and they, well, so I think it kind of all, the wheels fell off when they all kind of jumped on the girl's side to vote out Steve, and they basically showed their whole tribe, like, look how powerful we can be when we want to make a move. And it flagged their power way too early. I felt that, like, they should have tried to mediate being recognized a bit too early on, like, a bit. They should have tried to mediate that. And then they lost Jenna, and obviously the tribe switched on to their power. So as much as I was living for that kind of middle player gameplay, because, like, we all know that I love that style
you love
of gameplay.
The middle,
they didn't do the necessary mediating that needs to come with it. Like, for example, sorry, I feel like this answer's taking, like,
no, this is good. Go.
But for example, when me, Luke, and Jerry went to merge, we were obviously a small trio kind of working together and trying to avoid attention. So we made sure that we, like, never hung out. We actually actively kind of would say, oh, well, what about, you know, like, I definitely don't want to work with Luke, but if I have to, then I guess I will. Like, you know, so we created, like, distance between us, but made sure the voting attention or heat wasn't on any of the three of us. And I think maybe they needed to do that rather than that. Like, that whole tribe's a bit, like, super out there with, everyone's, like, super loud and proud about who they're aligned with. It's a bizarre dynamic.
I thought that. Look, I've been thinking that, and it's very clearly delineating. There's three girls who are here. There are the three or four guys over here. There are the parents, and then there's Paige, who's just kind of, like, clinging on in wherever she can. And we'll talk about – I love Paige. We'll talk about Paige later. But, you know, it's very clear and it's very evident. And that, you know, we had a lot of questions for you, Sarah, about this idea. You famously were known as being the middle, someone who sat right in the middle and was, you know, always kind of, like, working both sides or multiple sides, more than two. And that's a really dangerous place to be, because Heath even says that I know that we're in the middle. So he understands that, but I don't think he understands the fact that you have to appear to be working with everyone.
And totally. Look,
we only see a little bit of what happens on the show, but we definitely saw you last year hustling about and jumping around and kind of making sure that you were speaking to everyone.
Yeah, like, most of it is, like, mediating that risk. It's, like, you know, it's a hugely risky game to play. So you need to make sure, like, if you're going to be that middle person, especially a middle alliance. So not only are you threatening because you're a full alliance of middle players, but like, even just singularly as one person, you've got to make sure that you're always monitoring people's perception of you.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, listening back to our podcast, last time we spoke, I really liked that you were talking about how it's the bigger people need to come together. That it's not about the especially at this point of the game, it's not about letting the bottom players slide through. And it's, you said something about trusting in mutual, you trust in the fact that it's mutually beneficial for each of you. So with that in mind, do you think that what Benji tried to do was actually the right move? Should he have said, okay, Heath, Tegan, come stay with us, you know, like, don't worry about the girls anymore. Should he have tried to mend that friendship? Or do you think at that point the horse had already bolted and it was time for him to go for the other big threats?
Well, to put it this way, I think Benji made the perfect move.
Okay.
The reason being is so him and I feel like him and Robbie are super tight and like they're a really strong duo, as are Fenella and Shani. And then obviously both of those two people are in kind of trio alliances, with Zach and Anita being like an addition to that three. But both Zach and Anita are obviously kind of, like, if you're really thinking about it, kind of liabilities.
Yes.
So in terms of the strong sticking together, I actually think that it is mutually beneficial for the two strong opposing alliances to kind of go, like, nothing brings people together like a mutual enemy.
Sure.
So because they're evenly matched, like, those two alliances is like, okay, well, you know, you trust Robbie and I trust, you know, So I trust Robbie and you trust Shani, like, and whatever. There's like, you can come together to make quite a strong quad alliance, or six-person alliance. And where the trust is the division of trust is quite even. Whereas if, like,
that's a good point.
You can't say the same for Tegan and Heath, because they're in this weird, powerful place, which Benji is obviously like picking up on. So I think he actually has come and kept the strong together by going, like, getting that opposite alliance and going, okay, you know, we're generally going for each other, but right now we need to come together to make sure Heath and Tegan lose power, because right now they're a mutual threat for both of us, because they're threatening both of our power.
I think that's a really good point that you've made about identifying the key. Yes, it's they're these groups of three, but it really is Benji and Rob. And on the other side, it is the Shani Fenella thing. And I guess that by joining forces in the three, you're not just committing to a group of six. You're ostensibly committing to a solid four. Where everyone has an even say, because look, Zach is not going to make it far, and if he does, then he's your goat to the end. And Anita's probably not going to make it past, you know, the tribal phase if there's some sort of mix up. So I actually think you've touched on something pretty important. What is it though that makes Shani and Fenella, in your eyes, a more a better asset than Teeth. I called him Teeth.
Teeth. Oh my God, that's the cutest alliance name. Teeth.
That's pretty good, actually.
The Teeth Alliance. And I have to say, they both have really, really white teeth. So I'm like coining it, Nick. I think you're onto something.
My verbal stumbling helps every once in a while. So you're saying that, as you know, if we cleared the deck of all the other players and it was just we're at the final six, do you think that you would want to be sitting next to a Shani and a Fenella? Or a Heath and Tegan?
If I was Benji?
Yeah.
So at this point in the game, from what I've seen, 100% Fenella and Shani. Just because I think if you can get to the end by playing the middle, to me, obviously, because like I'm totally biased towards like this style of game, but to me, if you can get to the end in like by playing that position, that is the most impressive quintessential survivor gameplay you can possibly get, because every side trusts you. You only screw over people like when you need to, and like you're basically a master manipulator if you can get to the end in that way. So I think like if you're like sitting next to a Heath or a Tegan, their gameplay I feel would have to have been so advanced to be able to like you know dodge all those bullets. Because there's a lot of them. And whereas Shani and Fenella, as great as their gameplay might be, it would, I guess, be more similar to yours. And therefore, it's kind of just like, okay, well, who played the better version of the same game?
So we had a question that kind of deals with this. I know we're skipping ahead, but Ivan asked in the Patreon group, first of all, he says he's a big Sarah fan, and that you masterfully played the middle for such a long stretch without ever getting caught or having your game in jeopardy. It's a long question, but I'm just going to trim out here. Yep. What future advice would you give to people who are trying to emulate her gameplay or just trying to play that double agent role? What subtle things should they be doing?
Well, it's really, really hard. Okay, so from...
Because it seems fraught with risk.
it is fraught, and I know. And I actually went... So when I auditioned for Survivor, I like kind of one of my kind of key things that I think... like pricked up the producer's ears is they were like, one of the questions in the audition was like, you had to go around in a circle and say why you would be good on Survivor. And I basically, my whole thing was that I'm not, I would be good on Survivor because I'm here to play, not necessarily to win. So like, you know, I want to, like, if I'm going to get the chance to go out there, I want to like play hard. I don't like, if I'm playing to win, I'm coasting, I'm playing it safe, I'm like, you know, I'm being the goat and then only making moves when necessary, which is totally respectable of whatever. But you know, I'm wanting to play. So I did go out there knowing that it was rife with risk, but I think I feel like I have a really good sense of people and what they need and like picking up on people's maybe insecurities or I guess just what they need from me. So I knew that when you're people managing, if someone's like super insecure, you've got to make sure that they feel safe. And I felt like I would be good at doing that. I guess I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but for me, I remember my biggest rule was to make people trust me was basically to constantly be giving out sort of information, like quote unquote information that's not necessarily important information.
Sure.
So for example, I would go to each side of the alliance and say something super obvious. So like, but say in a way that the alliance that I was talking to feels like
you're divulging something.
Yeah, I'm divulging. So say it's a girls versus boys situation. I would go to the boys and I'd be like, oh my God, the girls, like they really want you out. And the boys kind of would be like, oh yeah, well, I mean, I already know that. But in their head, I'm trying to help them out.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I think that like, that's what you've got. You've always got to kind of pander to that, like you're helping whichever side you're trying to convince you're working with, I guess.
So, you know, look, the danger is that the people in the middle often get run over, and that's a quote by Aubrey. And in this instance here, we see that Heath and Tegan do get run over in this double episode. To some extent, obviously we'll get to the idol. The interesting thing to me was that for Benji to pull this off, he goes up to Shawnee and he even says, this is the exact quote, I don't know you very well. We haven't spoken much.
Yeah.
Yet it still works. And I was so surprised. I was 100% prepared for the girls to go and compare notes and realize that, hold on a second, he's selling us a bill of goods. And then for it to flip on Benji, at least in the second episode.
Right.
And it never happened. And it just seemed to me that he didn't have that relationship that would mean that they wanted to work with him, and that's why they were willing to, or they were working with him. What it speaks to me is that the girls weren't actually buying into the lie about Tegan coming for Anita. I think that Shawnee and Fenella were probably aiming to go for Tegan at some point anyway, and this gave them a good insight, a good way to do it. And I don't know how you feel about that, or if that's, you know, pie in the sky, but it just seemed like they were so ready to go with it and it wasn't even about them.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I'm totally subscribed to that thought, but I kind of was coming at it from a different viewpoint. I kind of thought, Firstly, what I said before, I think Tegan and Heath demonstrated how much power they had. And I think if you're on opposing alliances, you kind of want to take away that middle power. But I actually thought Benji's delivery of the Tegan lie was actually quite convincing. And I'll tell you why. I think it's because, and I used a lot of this out there as well. So he kind of sandwiched in two truths and one lie. So for example, like in that conversation, he was saying, look, you know, Robbie is my main alliance, truth. I kind of only trust Robbie, you know, the most, truth. Again, so like two things he's saying is like they're reading it as like, okay, so Benji's like being super honest here, he's being super open and you know, being quite transparent. But then after saying two truths, he goes, yeah, and I've heard that Tegan wants, you know, you guys next. So in the kind of context of that conversation, I feel like they would be more inclined to believe him.
Okay. That's really interesting.
Because he seems to be being transparent in that moment.
It sounds like it's like the old game that you play in, like, you know, on school camp, two truths and a lie.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. But the thing that concerned me was that even once Tegan was voted out, was there no fact checking? You know, that Tegan voted for Zach. She didn't vote for Anita. She voted for Zach. Now, you know, Heath did vote for Anita, and we'll talk about that as well in a second. But, you know, so Tegan didn't vote for Zach. And didn't Heath follow it up with the girls and say, hey, how come you flipped? And then they would say, well, you know, we heard they were coming for you. Like it just either there was fact checking and it went nowhere, or they were just, Heath just kind of just like let it go and, yeah, it just seems weird that lie to me, and I really do take your point. I think that's pretty interesting. Yeah. But it just to me, that lie didn't have enough legs to cause as much damage as it did.
True.
So I'm really impressed that it did.
Yeah, that's actually very true. And I actually didn't even think about that. That, like, you know, where's the where's the fallout the next episode? And that's like kind of one of my gripes with this season a little bit. Every episode seems quite self-contained. Like all these crazy things happen and you're like, okay, well, like Moana's idol, what's happening like next episode? Oh, you know, Robbie sees Heath with an idol. What happens next episode?
Yes.
You know, Benji tells a dodgy lie. What happens next episode? So what is the edit doing? Like, we need more information. We're Survivor fans and we need to pull this stuff apart. And they're not, they're kind of giving us scraps of strategy.
They're making it really hard for us podcast people, aren't they? You know, we're just having to fill in so many blanks.
they're pandering too much to general Australia and us Survivor nerds are not getting enough. They're going hungry.
That's right. Feed us. We're like the contenders tribe out here. We just want a reward.
Oh, who are looking so hungry.
I want to just, before we get to the actual tribal council, I just want to kind of touch on, you know, the bond between Tegan and Heath out there. It seems like they just trust each other so implicitly. He finds the idol clue in the flag. And a funny little tidbit on Twitter, Jonathan Lapalia said that piece of paper was there for days before anyone actually found it, which is hilarious to me.
Oh, my God.
I actually thought that was a really, really cool, the fact that there was, Zach was like putting his foot all over it and he didn't.
Oh, my God. That was the best moment. I lived for that hero versus villain moment.
Yeah, definitely. I really like that, you know, he trusts her enough that he says, I've got the idol clue. And she goes, okay, cool. I'll go out there and kind of like distract everyone. You know, that's what you want in an ally. Like that is that is always what I wanted out there. I just wanted one person that would just have my back. And I did to some degree. I had Tegan, but you know, that didn't kind of, you know, my own Tegan, but that didn't quite work. And I just look at that. And I'm just like, that is just such Survivor gold there.
Oh, isn't it? I know. I totally ship the Teeth Alliance. but yeah, I agree. Like it's really was really awesome to see, you know, those two go, okay, well, you know, let's work together. There's like, obviously it's Heath's idol, but obviously Tegan trusts him so implicitly that, you know, if need be, he'll use it to save the alliance. And like, hopefully like that's kind of what we see a little bit later on. So it's really nice that they got it together and hopefully they'll both use it to further themselves in the game.
So before we get to the tribal council, I just want to touch on something that Benji said. He says, you know, I'm preparing for war and I feel like I'm playing with a bunch of amateurs. You know, and, you know, he talks about being the king and wanting to be the boss. Like, why is it so annoying when Benji does it, yet when Luke does it, it's just amazing?
I was wondering the same thing. I'm like, why is it when Benji says it, it's super cringe, but like when like Henry or AK or Luke says it, I was like all about it. I don't know. I also got that same vibe. I was like, come on, can you stop saying king and queen and using these analogies? It's a little cringe.
Yeah, like good on him, because we need someone like that who's luxuriating and playing the game. But it's just so funny, because I think someone on Twitter was like, oh, is Benji the new Luke? I'm like, there is only one Luke. Like,
there is 100% only one Luke Toki.
Okay, so we get to tribal council and Tegan is saying that, you know, we don't have to always vote the same. She says it at the top of the episode and they didn't vote the same. Why do you think that when it came down to it, that Tegan and Heath actually voted separately? Was it to throw people off? Like, were they trying to do what you were saying before, which is, you know, not vote the same and not look like such an obvious couple? Because if so, I give them points for that, but not the time. Like, you need those votes.
So. I know. Yeah, I think, well, that's the thing. I think that's what they were doing to maybe try and mediate the fact that they all jumped on one side with the Steve vote and they were like, okay, let's just show people that we don't do that every time.
Yeah.
However, they lacked the self-awareness to be like, exactly, like this is the wrong moment to do that. Which, you know, is a testament to the rest of the players for obviously kind of hiding it well enough to make them believe that there wasn't any oncoming attack. And even at the start of the episode, Tegan basically christened her vote out by saying, I'm feeling really safe. I'm really happy with my position in the tribe.
Never say that ever. Never say that. But guys, if you go out and play Survivor, I don't care how confident you are. Like, there were votes where there was, you know, not many, but there was a vote where I knew I wasn't going home, and I never would have ever said that in a tribal, in a confessional. It is just
no way.
Complete kryptonite for your game.
Yeah.
All right, so we get to tribal council and we have this twist. And Sarah, I would love to get your take on this twist, because this is something that Australian Survivor loves to do around the, you know, in the first kind of big twist of the game. And we've seen three different iterations of this so far. And let's talk about this one first, and then I want to see how you can compare them to all three twists. But the twist is is that the person voted out will not go home. They will go to Exile Beach. They will wait there until the next person voted out, be it whichever tribe, and then only one of them will enter the game.
Yes.
Did you like this?
I love this. I love that we're interjecting a little bit of American Survivor into the game. And also, I actually really liked that Jonathan flagged that Exile Beach was happening before they went to vote.
Yes, okay.
I think that's really important in terms of, you know, the argument of, like, game twists aren't fair. Like, it's I think it's super cool that Jonathan said, like, look, this is an Exile Island, Exile Beach vote. And so it gives them a little chance to be like, okay, well, let's consider that before we vote.
Yes, I think that's the key thing to discuss here, because I feel that that came out of the discussion that many people had, you know, last year with the
yes.
Tara and Lise vote, and even the year before with the myself and Connor vote, that there was no way to prepare for it. And and look, as a beneficiary, it was great. But I also understand that you know, you should be able to play within some sort of rules that you can predict. And so I did like that he said it at Tribal Council. Do you think that the show was hoping that there would be people getting up and scrambling at Tribal Council, changing their votes, whispering in each other's ears?
I think, yeah, I do, because ever since that kind of became the norm on American Survivor, I think we all love seeing a bit of last-minute tribal scramble.
Yeah.
However, I think when you're aiming for a blind side like that, like a Tegan blind side, this, you know, you can't, it's pretty hard to then formulate a new plan at tribal when you're already having a complicated plan. So I think maybe it would have been too risky for them to kind of be like, oh, okay, well, let's consider Exile Island. And
you know,
it would just been too many balls in the air.
Well, the interesting part is that Paige actually, and correct me if I got this wrong, but there's a Paige that leans into Tegan and says, you know, what do we do? Now, at that point, Paige must have known what the real plan was, which was to get rid of Tegan. So what was Paige trying to do in that moment? Was she trying to double check that Tegan is sticking with her vote and it's not flipping back on Paige? Was Paige trying to, I don't know, was Paige, because she was hesitant in the voting booth, was Paige actually still planning on voting for Tegan, but then when the Exile twist came on, it was like, okay, I'm definitely going to go for Tegan now because I don't want to be the one person who isn't. You know, I thought that was really interesting, and I'd love to know what was actually going on there.
Again, it's like, give us more strategy, editors, whoever you are. Like, it's all great to see these muscly men in challenges, but come on, we need a bit of, you know, it's not making sense for us nerds. Yeah, no, I don't know. It's hard to read Paige. I feel like she's a huge fan, so mate, like, there could maybe even be a bit of she's like putting Tegan at ease, or like, like kind of going, oh, what do we do? Even though she knows Tegan's going home, but I guess it stops Tegan from doing anything erratic and like messing up their plan. I don't know. It's hard to really, I don't know what Paige is doing out there. Like, it just seems like a different thing, a different strategy every episode. And I don't even think that's necessarily her. I just think we're not seeing, we need her confessionals. We need like a, okay, this is my position.
Yeah.
This is my way out of it. But we're just kind of seeing her actions, but not really the thought behind it.
That's a good point. And look, I'd like to give her the benefit of the doubt and think that, you know, there was real purpose behind what she was doing. But like, it would, you know, she's in a pretty precarious spot as it is. People are about to blindside Tegan, and then you lean in and, or not lean in, but you start whispering to her at Tribal Council. If I was someone else on the tribe with trust issues around Paige, I'd be thinking, oh, great, she's telling her the plan.
Oh, my God, 100%. Yeah. You would. You'd just be like, Paige, can you just shut your mouth for 2 seconds? God, just let us do it. Just be the goat vote and just, like, bloody stay in your lane for 2 minutes.
I think in that moment, like, Paige has no choice. Even if she did want to vote with Tegan for some reason, you do have to just kind of pile on Tegan at that point. She's going home. It's the majority there.
Yeah, it's kind of like drowning cat situation.
And look, you've been described as a drowning cat before.
So. Yeah, and I actually subscribe to it. Like, if someone's going down, I think there's not really a way to save them. I don't understand why. Like, I'm not about the honor system where, you know, you like stand by a sinking ship. Like, I'm like, look, if I'm a sinking ship, leave me, man. Like, save yourself.
There aren't enough life jackets here for all of us. Just
exactly. Like, a true alliance member will let their alliance members kind of keep charging forward, save yourselves type thing. To me, that's good survivor honor system.
Oh, Sarah, that is great. I think, I think that many people will enjoy that analogy. So just we were talking about Jonathan saying about, you know, telling them at the vote. I want to pitch another idea at you. You know, where you and I were sitting around, you know, planning out the season, you know, when are the twists going to be? And I suggest to you, producer Sarah, hey, how about what we do is at the challenge, we say the losing tribe goes back to camp with this bottle and they can only open it back at camp. They open the bottle at camp and it says, tonight you'll be sending one person to Exile Island. How does that change the actual dynamics of how people were going are going to vote if they have the afternoon to prepare for it? Is it better or worse?
I think it makes it way more fair. It's kind of like, so they heard the strong opinions against the game twist of the last two seasons, and they kind of came a little bit towards making it fair.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they were going to make it fully fair, they would do exactly what you just suggested, because then it's like, okay, well, let's formulate a whole plan around this twist.
I think it wouldn't be better. I think it is fairer, but, you know, Survivor isn't fair. But
Yes, I agree.
I do think that what it would have done is people would have gone, oh, okay, let's just send Paige.
Like, 100%. Yeah,
I think that it was better for the show because people weren't gun shy to try out a blind side, because I don't know if they would have tried it if they knew that Tegan wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah, 100%. Like, if they get rid of Paige, like, she's not got a lot of numbers that are going to seek vengeance for Paige. But yeah, that's kind of essentially what you just said is what I was going to say in that. I do like an unsuspecting, like, so it's fairer, but I like an unsuspecting twist because it's modern Survivor. Like, it's like that all the time now. You've got to basically always have plan A, B, and C.
Yeah, think on your feet.
Yeah, and that, and to me, that's another, you know, it's another step up in the layers of Survivor gameplay. And, you know, so if something, you know, like Ben had to go, okay, well, how do I come back from this? This was supposed to be a consequenceless vote for me, but now it's got kind of more consequences than I had anticipated, and it creates for more interest in as a viewer anyway.
Definitely. And I think that they, you know, that the revenge story of someone getting voted out, I can speak from firsthand experience, plays well on as a TV product.
Yeah.
I think they like the idea that now, like, Tegan is sitting there smarting for days going, oh my God, what's happened? How did this happen?
Yeah, totally. And, like, you know, her alliance member back home still has an idol. So, you know, like, there's all this, you know, honor system and people love it. And, you know, avenging a fallen soldier, like, you know, that's great. It makes for excellent TV.
Couple of things. Did you think that Anita's shock at getting votes at Tribal Council was strange as I did?
Is like, is Anita like, was her dad like a human and her mum was a cartoon? Like, is that how she came to be? Because I'm like, you're the most animated person I've ever bloody, like, I watch cartoons and she's still the most animated person I've ever seen on TV.
Cartoon.
she was shocked. It was kind of cute to see, like, how just, like, personally she took it seemed. I don't really know what to say. Everything that Anita does, I'm kind of just like, oh, okay, we get it. Like, you know.
She wasn't as shocked the second Tribal Council when she actually went home.
I know, yeah. Well, I guess she just thought she was so safe within her girls' alliance. She was just like, nah, like, it's me and the girls and I can say that as much as I want and no one's ever going to come for me because you can do that in Survivor.
You shouldn't be shocked. Your character type, the older woman, like, is a big target in the early part of the game. Like, you should have expected.
Like, you're Anita. You're like, your name lends itself to being called the Queen Ant. Like, okay, like, be aware of it.
The ant pants. What did you think of Zach's voting confessional? Arrogance and ignorance are two qualities that are unattractive in a woman.
Oh my God. Like, I hardly want to give Zach any attention, but it's just like, I'm just like, isn't it a bit of a case of the what is it? What's the saying? The pot calling the kettle black. Like, I was just like, all right, mate, take a good hard look in the mirror. And then, like, I'm wondering if he's kind of looking back and watching this now and being like, oh yeah, it's super, it really isn't an attractive quality, but on me.
Look, I hope he's looking back and thinking that. I don't think he is. I don't think he is. I don't know if anyone else out there had this thought, and I don't know whether it's because I was sitting there when it happened, but
yeah,
it reminded me of Jenna. It was the opening line. The first couple of words were the opening line of Jenna Louise's comment to Lee at Final Tribal Council. Ignorance and arrogance are two qualities I don't favor. And I was just like, he's quoting Jenna Louise. Oh, no, wait, this is about women, the misogynistic pig. Yeah.
I mean, he might be a Survivor fan. Oh, no, wait, he's still a misogynistic pig. Oh, get it. Oh, my God. That's...
If anyone else thought that it reminded them of JL, of all the listeners, please reach out so I'm not just the only one. Queen JL.
You were really just like, you always say the good in people and you really like, come back. Like, come back and be a good person.
I was.
Like, come on.
I was. And I was so ready. I had my phone ready to message JL and be like, JL, you got a shout out. Oh, wait, no, don't worry.
Never mind. Don't watch it. It's not super. It's super offensive towards women. Never mind. Don't watch it.
Couldn't think of anyone who would hate it worse than JL.
Yeah, totally.
Before we get to the next episode, I just want to, I want you to compare those three twists for me. Now, you don't have to be impartial about season one because I'm here. You know, go for it. The season one twist was two tribes being there, and then there is a swap. It's not a vote off. Both people are voted off and get to bring people with them. Season two, Tara is voted off and then straight away they vote again and they vote out Annalise. They both go to Exile Island, go to the next tribe and go to the other tribe. And then this season we have two people going to Exile Island. Which of the three do you like the best? And then rank them for me.
Okay, this is a super tricky question. I feel like I like having my homework before the test, Nick. So as a teacher, it would have been great if you'd have flagged this question with me earlier.
As a teacher, I also like to terrorize my students. So
That's true. I'm thinking on the spot now. I have to say, I think considering all things and considering that this is their third go around, I think the third twist has to be the best because it incorporates Exile Island but makes it a bit fairer in that you can quickly abort the plan or not.
Yeah.
I think it's circumstantially a really good option and a really good person to have been voted out to Exile Island. It's really good plot development. Like it's a middle person who has, it's really good TV. So that one is like definitely the top. It's so hard with who gets second and third because I know my season, like there's so many strong feelings about my season's twist and people not liking it. I feel like my order is really boring, but then the second, so our season I think is second best because it's really hard.
I'll tell you what, how about I tell you what I think.
Yes, you tell me.
I actually think, and people are going to think this is because it involved me, but I actually think that season one's twist was the most interesting simply from the fact that we had never seen anything like that before.
Yes,
in all of Survivor history, that was a fresh spin on a concept that look, I've seen a lot of Survivor, I've seen all of Survivor, and I was sitting there, and it never even crossed my mind that that could happen. So I feel like if it can blindside me and Andy and Craig and Sue, all these people who know Survivor like inside out.
Yeah.
If it can blindside them, then that is the sign that it is something fresh and new and interesting. So I like that. This season
for grumpy gameplays, is that not like, well, how are we supposed to know that's
Oh, for sure. Like- no, I'm sorry. I probably should have framed the question better. Like as a TV viewer.
Well, that's a different story.
Sorry, that's my fault. See, I when I say terrorize my students,
I know, it's like you really set me up that weren't for a wrong even, answer.
Putting things in the test that we didn't even cover in class.
Yeah.
So I think that just the excitement of that was pretty cool to both live it and to watch it back on TV. What they've done this season is a really, really clever spin on Redemption Island because Redemption Island many people don't like and it goes for too long. So there's just a quick little way to do it. It's a good way to get a non-elimination episode, which Australian Survivor needs. But it doesn't. Yeah. It's not long in the tooth, and it's just kind of like a nice little way to do it. I actually think that what they did last season was the worst by a country mile. From a TV viewpoint, it was just like so tacked on at the end. It was like, oh, yeah, and you're going to vote someone else out. I was like, what? Like,
yeah.
Annalise, like, that's a really shitty place to be in because, like, how do you prevent?
Come back from that.
Yeah, how do you prevent against that? And I just think that that was very kind of ham-fisted, that one. So
I agree. Yeah. And I also just quickly, I think that the nature of them then going to another tribe and then and having, I guess, the chance to just turn a whole tribe and bias a whole tribe, I think that is there's a lot to be said for that. People, you know, aren't so, you know, they're obviously not so hot on it. So whereas Exile Beach, it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, that they get voted off, they do get a second chance. But it's a little bit more isolated and they've still got to work to come back from that before they can really kind of start digging their teeth in and going for that revenge. Like it's just to me, it's better structured.
Sure. Yeah, I do like the idea. It's, you know, it's one person coming back and like, but this raises the question, Sarah, what's going to happen on Monday?
I've been so busy this week. I'm trying to remember.
So we've got two people. You know, we'll get to the second episode in a second, but this is a good place to talk about it. So we've had Tegan voted off. We've had Anita now voted off. I assume the episode will begin, or there won't be some sort of reward, but it'll, you know, in the first half there will be a challenge to see who comes back in, and that's, you know, either Tegan. Say it's Tegan for argument's sake.
Yeah.
What happens? Does Tegan then just get to choose which tribe she goes back to? Does she get just thrown back to any tribe? Or is it a drop your buffs moment and everyone then draws again for
two new tribes? Oh, my God, Nick, you're giving me all these delicious theories and I'm hoping it's all of them at the same time. Oh, my God. I would love it if she could choose to then go to another tribe. I think that would be absolutely amazing because, you know, it's one person, she's fighting off being the obvious vote, but there's people that they kind of want to get out, like Jackie and Shane. That would be an absolutely amazing dynamic to see. I think a whole, you know, reshuffle would be amazing because I'm so over this contenders, champions, like, let's change it up, let's change the dynamic up. That would be amazing. I don't know. I hope. Well, firstly, I do hope that it's Tegan that comes back, because basically if Anita comes back, it's all for nothing. There's no consequence really of anything happening because Heath was the only person that voted her off and it was going to be Heath anyway. So, you know, boring. But I don't know, Nick. You tell me.
I can't even remember how many people are left in the game without Tegan and that. But if it was even and they did like a drop your buffs and everyone kind of drew their buff, you know, and it was two new tribes and then she got to pick which one of those two she liked best, that could be a way to satisfy both things.
Oh, my God, that is having the cake and eating it.
Yes.
Can we quickly if only Survivor was live and we could quickly call now to the producers and be like, we've got a great idea. Just whatever you're doing, don't do that. Me and Nick have discovered something that's going to be epic for TV. Let's hope it's
just
that.
Trust us. Just trust us. We know.
We know. We're Survivor nerds. But what about the rest of Australia? Forget about the rest of Australia.
We don't need them. So I'm interested to see how that going. And I think that you know, we have to hold on off our rankings of which of these three twists was the best when we find out the mechanism of her going back into the game. So once we know that, then that'll kind of like weigh heavily. So
yes.
Let's talk about Tegan at Exile. What did you think of those scenes of her? You know, this Exile seemed pretty desolate there. You know,
a
little bit of a swamp. What do you think about that whole scene? You know, of course, you got a real hero montage there.
Yes, I love it personally. I remember seeing Annalise and Tara's faces when they came over to our tribe, and it was a little different because I guess at first they thought they were going home, so they had this kind of dangling of moment of that they would see their family and friends and stuff, and then they had to spend that awful night on Exile Beach. But I remember how broken both of them were by that experience. It's just, you've just been voted out, then you're alone on this cold beach and you have to make everything from scratch and pitch black, and there would be this real moment where you just want to give up and you'd be like, why am I doing this? I just want to go home. No, screw this, I don't even want to play anymore. Like there'd be all those kind of like super just down moments like that. And I really love seeing players get tested in that way. And it's like, okay, well, if you were really here for the right reasons, there is nothing that would send you home. And a night on Exile Beach or like a weekend on Exile Island, like that, you know, that's not going to break you, but it might take you close to that point. And I really love seeing Tegan, you know, have that moment and that journey and being like, no, nah, I'm going to come back. I'm going to fight from this. Like, the drama student in me is just like, yes, this narrative is amazing. Go Queen Tegan. Yes, Kira Montage, and she's a mom, and it all went really well. So I love seeing it. I love seeing her, and just being like, okay, well, I'm really buying her as someone who's committed to being there.
Look, I spoke to Annalise and Tara on the podcast, and they did put their arguments across, and it is very individualized, but there was certainly no crying on my end. I was cartwheeling that I got to stay. So
yeah,
I guess we all deal with it differently, but nothing could have wiped the smile off my face that night.
It's like a second chance. It's all perspective. It's how you see it. And Tegan has kids, Tara had kids.
For sure. You know, and Tegan was out there by herself. I kind of like landed in like a tribe that was winning. And so, yeah, I understand the difference.
Yes. Yeah.
It's pretty funny because Tegan's exile actually looks like exile, whereas Tara and Annalise's exile was actually the beach that I lived on in season one. That's Sanapu Beach. It's not that bad, guys. It was.
You were just like, oh, toughen up, guys. There's a banana tree around the corner. Gee.
It was actually just a really nice beach. It was better than all the others, so you're fine.
Yeah. Go for a swim and just get those tears out. Come on.
So Tegan dealt with the real deal, and I think she dealt really well, and I hope it's foreshadowing that her return. Nothing against Anita, but, you know, Tegan is one of my rooting interests. So
yes, 100%. I'm on the same page with you, Nick. Go Tegan. Go Teeth Alliance.
Go Teeth.
I'm really not letting this go, am I? I love it.
So, you know, the contenders lose the next challenge, the next immunity challenge, and they are heading back to Tribal Council. And before we get that, we got the scramble. You know, we got, you know, what is going to happen, and they've all got different ideas. But what I really didn't like was the interaction between Heath and Robbie. And Robbie says,
"Oh yes, I know the one you're talking about." Ugh.
Robbie says, "Oh, I don't want to send you. I don't want to send you. I don't want to send you." And then he's like, "Well, are you going to vote me?" He's like, "No, oh, I can't say that I won't vote for you." I was just like,
"Yeah,
but you just said you don't want to send him." Like,
yeah. Yeah.
That was frustrating.
Oh, my God. And I was just like, no matter what, like, even if you are trying to come, like, obviously I feel like Robbie is like, okay, I want to read as this super trustworthy, honourable guy. And look, my only reason why I'm out here is just for challenges, and I'm not strategic, so I'm going to look honest and just tell the truth. But even if you're going for that vibe, never reveal a vote of who you want to go home to the person going home, because it just means that they have a chance to like look for an idol or do something crazy
or play an idol.
Yeah, like you're just asking for your plan to not go to plan. Like I was also just looking at him being like, Robbie, what the hell have you, like, oh my God, stick to challenges, mate. Just stop talking.
Well, he's not really winning any challenges either, so I'm not.
No, I don't know. Maybe the starvation's starting to eat away at his brain and he's just like, I just need some pie. I want some pie.
What about, okay, I guess the big question was, you know, they're going to vote for Heath. The only really voice of dissent was Fenella, and we'll get to that. She wanted to vote for Zach, but you know, most people are locked in. They want to vote for Heath. Heath's argument is, look, I've got this idol. I can maybe not play the idol and hope that they are all going to vote out Anita. So we'll get to the reasons as to why he wanted to go for Anita in a second. But the big question, two questions for you, Sarah, and I didn't give you these before the test, so you're just going to have to do it.
Being on the feet.
One, did you think that he was ever going to not play his idol? And two, do you think he shouldn't have played his idol? Go.
He 100% was always going to play that idol. Why? Because Robbie opened his big mouth and pretty much said, you are 100% going home, and he would be an idiot to not play it. I think it was just the perfect, it was delicious to watch. Like, perfect play. He literally, he arrogance and ignorance tribe. Like, they didn't split the vote, and he managed to send Anita home with just his, like, his lonesome little vote. Yeah. Like, I think it was perfect. I really, I, I, I loved all of it. And I didn't really feel tense that he was never not going to play it, because as soon as Robbie said that, I'm like, oh, well, I know what Heath's going to do at Tribal.
Yeah. It was pretty crazy. And, you know, last week I spoke on the podcast with Phoebe about some, you know, Survivor stats, one of them being that Phoebe was holding the title of, you know, she's the only person to have found an idol and played it for herself to vote out a majority of the, to cancel a majority of the votes and save herself.
Yeah.
Well, I hope she enjoyed that stat for 1 week, because
She did. She was wearing her crown all week. I've been talking to her and she's like, did you know a little fun fact about my Survivor gameplay?
Well, you make sure that you go and tell her that it's over, because Heath has now found an idol, used it himself, cancelled a majority of the votes, saved himself. And not only that, he has now eclipsed her. He cancelled, what was it, seven votes, whereas Phoebe only cancelled 5. So,
yeah.
Sorry,
well, maybe
Phoebe.
Maybe they can be king and queen. How about that? They can rule over Idol Kingdom together until there's another season where a boy or a girl plays it correctly.
Well, there's a lot of king and queen talk
this week.
Let's, I don't know if we can cope with it anymore.
Lord and lady then.
Yeah, okay. So congratulations to Heath. Survivor history there. And I think that it might even be Survivor history voting someone out with one vote, you know, at this point in the game. So other than the final three. So well done. Okay, but I want to pose this to you. I think that there was another route he could have taken. Now, you like risk, Sarah. You like risk.
Yes, I love a risk.
You're a very risky player. Would you ever have considered this? Don't play your idol. Get voted out. Go to Exile Beach. Beat Tegan, which there's a big question mark around that because she was great, but, you know, he's no slouch in a challenge.
Beat
Tegan. Tegan goes home. Your threat of the power couple is no longer in play.
Yeah.
You go back into the game. You have an idol that no one knows about, because you definitely would have played an idol if you had one.
Yeah.
And now you can go to the contenders, because if there's going to be some sort of swap or something on the horizon, knowing that, look, I was voted out, guys. No one wanted to play with me. I'm yours.
Do a Nick Ardanza.
Yes. Now, that bit didn't work so much for me. But do you think that that is the riskiest, craziest harebrained scheme that even Sarah Talik would not play?
I do, Nick, to be quite honest.
Okay.
And it's an amazing idea, but it is basically presuming, it's acting on the presumption that Heath will beat Tegan.
Yes, of
and
course, of course.
And you have no idea what style of challenge it might be. Like it might be an endurance challenge, and maybe Tegan, because she's lighter, she can hold on easier to a pole. Like you have no idea what challenge it's going to be that you know decides who comes back in the game. And so essentially you know what I never would have risked? I never would have risked like walking off the island and hoping by some like twist that I came back back into play. So it is hugely risky. It's amazing. It would guarantee you like a good few more a good distance in the game if you beat Tegan.
Yeah.
And you know and all that with the idol and you can say that you have no one. You're a free agent. However, the first obstacle to that plan to me is a little too scary for even Sarah Talik, the biggest risk taker.
Yeah, look, I'm very risk averse in Survivor. That was suggested by the great Annabelle, who is the author of the Spice Rack blog. Check her out. She is the best on Twitter. She came up with that idea and I'm definitely stealing it. I thought that was a really interesting way, but this risk-averse Survivor player would never in a million years do that.
No. Like, it's amazing. I'd love to see it play out.
It would be the best TV ever. But I guess what you're doing is you are sacrificing, like, a good ally. Like, if it does work, you have now – you've rubbed that ally from the board completely, whereas, you know, I think a good ally in this game is way more important than an idol – than a, you know, anything, then a people, you know, any other, nothing in this game is better than a good ally. And
although if you got to the end with that story, that is a sole Survivor move right there. Like you are acting as a, like totally on your own, taking those risks, and it is, you really would be like surviving as an incredible individual player.
Well, it's very similar to South Pacific with Ozzy kind of voting himself out to go to Redemption Island to beat Christine, and you know, he comes back, but that's Ozzy, you know, like he's proven himself in challenges. Heath's only been done like six, you know, you don't know like the breadth of what Survivor can throw at you. So
100%.
What did you think about Heath kind of, you know, pitching this idea of sending a weak girl like Anita to go against Tegan so that, you know, he can, you know, ensure that, well, not ensure, but, you know, give Tegan the best chance of coming back?
I think that's 100% what I would have done. And it also makes sense. It's kind of like it doesn't read necessarily as Heath is making an overtly huge move. He's going like, all right, well, I'm with the boys now. And who do the boys want? They want one of the girls. Yeah. And who's the weakest girl? It's Anita. So it doesn't read as like he's doing anything crazy, which is obviously why I don't think they split the vote, because they were like, okay, well, poor Heath is just trying anything at this point. I think it makes sense that he went for Anita.
So what did you think? So why would they not split the vote? Is there something that we're missing? Was there not enough trust? Was there not enough time? What was it? Why would they not split the vote on Heath? Is it because they would think that even if he did have an idol, there would be no point in using it because no one would use it just to be sent to exile? People would only use idols to be saved from going home? I don't know.
You know, it's so baffling to me. And I wonder if it's just because they're so hungry because they've not won any food that they're just like, oh, I don't know, is it going to be Heath? Let's just do Heath. Because I did have that big like, okay, shall we all vote Heath group moment. And I wonder if like they were all that lazy that they were just like, yeah, that sounds good. And they just like didn't think of anything else. But like, surely not, right?
Well, look, I think you actually, you know, you might have stumbled onto something, because Sarah, were you involved in any split votes? Like, I'm trying to think. I don't really have that good of a knowledge of what happened anymore. It's kind of erased from my memory. But were you involved in any like significant vote splits?
No, but I was involved. My vote out was actually
a vote split against you.
in that. The group basically had a big circle chat, and I was the only one not in that circle chat. And they were basically like, it's Sarah, right? And everyone was like, yeah, we can't trust that girl. She's gone. And they didn't split the vote. It was totally unanimous. And okay, it's like, you know, they would have been screwed if I had an idol, but they obviously felt confident that I didn't, which they must have felt the same way about Heath. And it was a group. You know, a group discussion like mine. And I think when you're out there, especially, you know, this season, I do think when you're out there and you've been playing a long time and you're tired and grumpy and sad and whatever, maybe sometimes you do get a bit complacent with what seems like a super straightforward vote. Yeah. And maybe that's what it was, but I don't, it's just a shame. You know, you want to think that the players out there aren't just getting complacent.
But I think you're right. Look, I was involved in many split votes. Every vote that I was involved with except the first one was a split vote. And the one to vote out Connor, like I coordinated that, and that took so much effort. It takes so much effort, so much time when there are 13 people in the game. It's really tricky to try and get everyone on the same page. Sometimes it's just the path of least resistance is, look, it's fine. They won't have an idol. And Stephen's spoken about that before. So yeah, I think you might have stumbled across that.
I think that's what it is. And yeah, it's a bit boring. But you know, this season kind of lends itself to being a little bit boring and every now and then.
I really like that at Tribal Council, Jonathan was not giving Benji any credit. He was saying how it's like, well, Benji, the job's only half done because Tegan's still out.
I'm loving the emergence of Jonathan's little like sass, giving the contenders shit. Like I even liked when he was saying to Fenella, he's like, yeah, but in fairness, your ball went like, like he was so, I was like, sassy Jonathan, give me, like, I love it.
Sassy Jonathan is the best. We've spoken about Jonathan a couple of weeks ago, Jonathan on Twitter. Like he is peaking. He has reached peak host. I think the only gripe I'd have, and you know, I worship the ground he works on, is that he's still letting people get away with giving very non-committal answers at Tribal Council.
Yes. I mean, In saying that, it must be so hard though. I even remember when he was like, when we'd go to tribal council and we'd all give super diplomatic answers, and he really would push. He'd be like, now that's a diplomat. Like, he'd really push, but I think people are just putting, they must be putting their gameplay so first.
Yeah.
That then they're like, yep, it is a diplomatic answer, and I'm not giving you any more of that, because why would I? Because it's tribal council and everyone's listening to me. So sorry, Jonathan. But yeah, he must be banging his head against the wall.
The only other noteworthy thing from that trial, you know, we lose Anita, you know, she works it. But the only other thing that was noteworthy to me was Paige's eye roll. Perfect gif. Excellent. The Australian Survivor Twitter is all over it. And it made me sad because I was like, oh, where's the gif? I had a gif of my eye roll, and it was like the eye rolls into the back of my head, and I cannot find it. So I am taking this moment to put the call out to everyone. If you have the gif of me rolling my eyes,
please send it through.
It's the one while I'm still in the game. This is so self-serving right now, but it's my podcast.
I know, I'm like, this is 100%.
Yeah, so self-serving.
Nick Idanza's podcast.
I can do whatever I want, Sarah. It's the one where I'm in the game, I'm wearing my hat, I'm wearing a yellow shirt, and my eye rolls into the back of my head, and I need that. Not the one of me on the jury, the other one. So
there's a palm tree behind me, and I'm sitting on a beach. It's super easy to find. Like, you know, just stand out.
It's that tribal, Sarah. Look, if you've got it, guys, flick it my way, because I need
that. You know what I want as well? I'm going to put in a request to the fans. I want, if they find this gift, I want the two, like you and Paige, to be together, and I want both your eye rolls to like meet in the middle so that you end up looking at each other and it looks like a super sassy moment where it's like, oh my God, check this stupid situation out.
Can you merge GIFs? Because that would be pretty epic.
That's what needs that. Yeah, we need to make a new Frankenstein GIF of like ultimate sassness.
Well, the reason why I want that one is because it's not even an eye roll. It's like, I don't even know how I do it. My sister was talking to me about it the other day. She's like, your brain, it looked like you're having like a mini stroke on the inside of one of your eyes.
Yeah. So like, you're that perplexed by what's going on that your whole body is just shaking and your eyes are just like rolling around in your head as a result.
And if you're everyone's interested in finding where it is in the show, I have no idea, but it's probably when Sam Webb's saying something. So that's probably where you'll find it. We got so much about the contenders, but I guess we have to give a cursory glance to the champions.
Oh yeah, I guess.
We got a bit of Shan content, a bit of stuff about, you know, Lydia as a provider, blah, blah, blah. But the best stuff, I think, was the commando shaving Matt's face with fire.
Oh my God. I know. I was actually thinking, I know you do the Danza points at the end of this episode. And I was kind of thinking, do I just shoot one over to Steve just for his impressive barber skills? Like, that's amazing. That deserves a point, right?
I think so.
Oh my God. Well, I did it. Well, if we're talking about the champions, did you notice that the episode at the beginning of the week? So Ben got his little, I'm a smarty, I strategize, woohoo, look at me, I'm super smart, I'm a millionaire, rah, 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 rah. And then, like, conversely, on the other tribe, Shan got a very similar edit. Mm. So it's like they were flagging in that moment, like, these are the ones to watch out for, these are the strategy players, like, yeah, this is now their time for them to really start making moves. So I'm super interested to see what Shan does, because she's doing amazing things. And that's why I'm thinking Benji will be able to come back from this, because the edit is starting to build both of them up.
Yeah, I think that Shan is, we said this last week, she's definitely one to watch. So, you know, yes, not much going on this week, but, you know, there was a taste of her there.
Little Shan montage.
Yeah, her package from home. What did you think about the loved ones items? Did you get to participate in this last season? I don't think.
I did. Okay. And my parents were actually watching, and they were like, they were feeling really ripped off, because they were like, oh my God, we were only allowed to give you one tiny little thing and they get like a million different things. And like, also we had to wait all the way till merge to get ours, and like they're at day like nothing and they already get there. So like, a lot of them aren't even emotional because they're like, oh yeah, well, I saw my family a couple of weeks ago. Like, but it was, I have to say, I cried. I was just a sobbing mess when I, particularly for Matt Rogers and Commando Steve, because I just love seeing a big burly man cry, and I love seeing a big burly man like into his family, and I cannot believe what a legend Matt Rogers is. Like, his whole, anytime I find out more about his personal life, I'm just like, what a legend.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that we're getting so much good content from him, and I feel he's going to be around for a very, very long time.
I hope so.
He ain't going nowhere.
I hope so.
I thought that of all the items, that the best emotional item I've ever seen on Survivor is Monica's, a bear, that you press the button and your partner speaks to you. That was so clever.
I know, and her adorable little face, because she obviously, I thought it just said, I love you. And her adorable little, the moment, like, I love that they caught that on TV, where she just, like, was shocked and excited and all the feelings at once when she heard that it wasn't that old message. Oh, my God. Yeah. That was the most adorable moment ever.
Yep, for sure. I want to talk to you really quickly before we get to the Danzy about some of these challenges, because, you know, these challenges are challenges that both you and I have participated in, and I wanted to get your thoughts. Just in general, though, there seems to be a lot of animosity between the two tribes. It's very smack-talky this season. I don't know if that was something that you experienced, but that 100% did not happen on my season, and I don't know if that's something that is very common in Survivor, or is that just because of the verses in the title that is really kind of drawing out that smack talk?
Well, yeah, like I think maybe it is, because I think all those, you know, high profile people, I hope not, but maybe they're kind of thinking, like, look, you know, who the hell are you guys? We've actually all achieved stuff in life, and like, what even are you? And maybe the contenders get a little bit of that vibe, and obviously wouldn't take too kindly to it. Actually, and Fenella even said that weird comment at Brian, and I was like, oh, that's actually a bit of a personal jab. I'm not sure.
What did she say? Was it about him being old or something like that?
You know, if I would have said no, but she said something like, oh, you know, just watch your food intake, Brian, which I was just like, I mean, being sassy, but
yeah.
And I remember I compared it to when, you know, in our season we were playing we were, you know, versing a tribe, and I think it was Jackie said something to AK, like similar, of a similar nature. And all of us were just like, no, that is not on. You don't, you know, you don't attack someone for anything personal. You know, it's all, you can try to distract them from kicking a goal, but, you know, you don't attack them personally. That's not on. Like we actually all, you know,
self-regulated,
had a really bad reaction to that. So it is interesting to see. And I wonder if, like you said, it is the, like, just the nature of the two tribes being so different.
Yeah, it's like, you know, they were talking about, like, oh, old man, they keep saying it to Matt. But then, like, you know, you could tell that it kind of got to them, because when he was on the pontoon, they were whispering amongst themselves, and he's like, oh, how does it feel to be beaten by an old man? Like, you know, like, it's not like the bravado of just kind of having a laugh. Like, it seems to be kind of like stinging a little bit. So it's going to be interesting when we see them come together. But
and it's massively an ongoing theme. And it's funny enough, like, even if you look at their social medias, like, they continue to, like, kind of rub it in after the fact. Like, yeah, you want to call me an old man? Like, it's definitely hitting some sort of trigger point, because, yeah, it's weird.
Just really, the challenge with where you hold up the bags, you did that. And, any tips? Because you've got to think that Annalise has been giving Benji some tips on that one and how to play that.
I'm literally always thinking that. I'm like, I wonder what Annalise has advised him in this specific situation. The tip for me is, like, it's as long as you can last with everyone in, like, that's what's going to win you the challenge. As soon as one person goes, it's very hard to balance, you know, to hold two balls. And, you know, as soon as one person went, I was like, okay, well, if it's anything like mine, that tribe's kind of gone now.
I loved the spin on the Hot Pursuit challenge. Jonathan Lilia says, Nick, you played Hot Pursuit. Is there any strategy that actually works for this challenge? And I was thinking about this because, you know, obviously you run when there's the shallow water, but, you know, one of the things that you could see was happening there, like, it's actually quite hard when someone's dragging you along. Like when when the person at the top, you know, the strong people are at the front and they're pulling you, like, you actually can't even gain your feet. Like, you know, we all did pretty well. I clipped out just before, you know, we won. So I've put in a pretty good showing, but, you know, there was a bit there where, you know, Lee and Sam were there. Sam was pulling me, and it's just like, this is not helping, buddy. Like,
no, I actually, it's funny you say that. I noticed that with Paige as well. Like, Zach was like, Paige could hardly
keep
stay
up.
Standing, because he was just, every time she got her balance back, he'd just jolt her forward again. And I was like, I thought that. So it doesn't surprise me that you say it's actually very, that it makes for a difficult time. Yeah.
I think what you got to do is you got to put a strong person on the front to lead, and you got to have a strong person on the back that can kind of come around and make it more like a group run than a single file run. That's my thought. So.
Totally. And it's funny. When I was going on Survivor, I was like thinking about all of your challenges, and I was like, oh my God, that actually was the one that I really didn't want to do, because I knew it would be just so depleting of energy, and it just is it as exhausting as it looks like?
Oh,
are you just dead afterwards?
Like destroyed. Like I was destroyed. And one of the challenge, you know, when I was trying to prepare to go out there, I remember my sister, who's a big Survivor fan, she was like, I wonder if you have to do the challenge where you run around in a circle. I'm like, they won't do that. That is just too cruel, because, you know,
it's honestly torture.
When we walked in, I was like, oh my God, she was right.
No way.
Before we get to the to the questions, and there's a lot of them, so we're going to rapid fire them. I want to, let's award the Danzy, or otherwise known as the kiss of death, because everyone who gets 3 points seems to be having a pretty rough time in the game. So,
that's the edit's fault, Nick. 100%, because I'm actually involved in a power ranking at the moment with Tess and Luke, and every week we change up the power rankings, and it's because the edit is like the episodes are so self-contained that there's no way of predicting anything, because there's no, at the moment it doesn't seem that there's any like underlying narrative. It's kind of just like, oh, Moana gets sick in one episode and goes, and then, like, you know, Tegan's fine, but then, and everyone wants Paige, but then the next episode, no one wants Paige, everyone wants Tegan, and she goes. Like, it's frustrating. It's not our fault, Nick. It's the edit's fault.
Okay, good. I thought that it was the Danzy. So we can't.
No, not the Danzy, and it's not the power rankings.
Okay, we're all off the hook.
Woohoo! Sarah, I'm not biased at all.
Sarah, we need your 3, 2, 1, and just a bit. I'll show you the leaderboard after this, so I don't want to bias you. But thanks to Stephen Lowe, who's keeping track of everything for us out there. So, who is your 3 points going to this week?
Okay, I think Benji gets my 3 points because it was really the first time I saw a fully thought out, basically move. Like, Benji was like, okay, this is like the paint by numbers kind of system that we're doing, but I want this to happen, and this is how I'm going to do it. And it was a fully executed plan, and it worked out perfectly. We'll kind of see with the, you know, adding Exile Beach. So I feel Benji is really playing an amazing game and is the best player out there at this point.
Okay.
He gets my 3 points.
That's very good. I'll sign off on that, but I'm going to go somewhere a little bit different.
Okay.
Now, although this person did get blindsided by his ally going in the first episode, I think that cumulatively Heath gets my 3 points because he did a lot of good stuff.
Yeah.
He did a lot of good stuff. He not only got the idol, and, you know, that piece of paper was there for 4 days and no one else saw it, but he did. So that's great.
I wonder if his height advantage, like, made him see it better from the bird's eye view that he obviously operates on all the time.
He gets the idol. Not, like, I can't go past the fact that he cancels the most amount of votes that have ever been in a Survivor, Australian Survivor history. You know, so that he must not have given a single inkling that he had that. He's still willing to rally for Anita, not just kind of like rest on his laurels and say, oh, I've got an idol, Anita's going home anyway. He still tries to rally for her.
Yeah.
You know, he knows to play the idol when that system's not working. He's got this ride or die alliance with Tegan, which he is willing to, you know, he pushes to get someone to bring her back in the game because, like we said, a good ally is hard to come by. Well, you know, it was a little thing that kind of pushed it over between, you know, because Benji gets my 2 points. But it was, you know, what decided.
And conversely, Heath gets mine.
Okay, great. Well, what decided it for me was at the challenge, Shane mentions that she played an idol, which is terrible because you've just alerted everyone to the fact that idols are out there. But,
I know.
Which, look, they already know. But
I know what you're about to say.
But he then says, he's like, oh, you know, I actually don't have the wording exactly what he said, but I don't know if you remember it, but he said, he goes, oh, yeah, it's good to know that there are idols out there or something like that. Like, that's quick thinking, and he did it really believably. So I am super high on Heath, and
I agree.
He gets my 3 points. So I think we've done well, 3, 2, 2, 3.
Yes, yeah, I agree. And everything you said, it's so spot on. I love living for Heath, and I just, he's good TV as well. I like the eye candy, just quietly. You didn't mention that one.
He's a good-looking rooster. He's good. So who's your 1 point going to?
Do I have to follow through and give it and give Commando Steve my barber point, my 1 point?
I feel like we'd have a few angry listeners on our hands if we, you know, we can't really award the best player the barbershop award, but you know, he can have this. Okay, he can have an honorary, you know, honorable mention.
I'll honorary mention him then. Okay. Well, then in that case, I feel like just to even it out, I am going to have to just go with Sian. Although, okay. Is that really fair? Because we're not seeing much of her.
It's your point. You know, it's your point. You can do whatever you want until I tell you not to do what I just did.
Well, the reason I say Sian is just because I'm still really vibing her position. She's very clever getting in with the the strong guys, because it means like no one's going to come for her because they need to get the strong guys first. She's making it at merge at this point. And she just gets my point for consistency.
Great. I'm going to give it to someone who I did not think would get any more points this season, and that's Paige.
Okay. I'm not sure why you're saying Paige.
How the hell did Paige have like one of the most terrible weeks I've ever seen in Survivor history? Four straight episodes, I think it was, of being like considered the bottom, going home, terrible moves, whatever. And she survives two votes. Her name doesn't even come up.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you've got to be doing something right.
No, I don't agree. I don't think you can. I think sometimes people are just like, look, that person is so far on the outs. And this is how I would play the game. They are so far on the outs. And that's why the girls are keeping Zach around, because, you know, there's like really there's not much coming back from that position. At this point, like, we can really count on them staying out there. So why don't we get a bigger threat to our alliance first? Like, she's obviously just being used as a number at this point, which I don't really consider as great gameplay, because I kind of think that's what Christy did to kind of get to the end. And I, you know, I don't, for me, it's like, okay, well.
I agree with all that, but I got to say that in my experience, one of the most difficult things to do is course correct on Survivor.
Yeah.
If you can course correct to that degree, you get a point from me. Plus, there is a bit of a vacuum of other people that I could potentially give it to, I got to say.
Totally. But the difference with you is like the edit was really showing specifically things you were doing to get back in, to really wriggle back in. And because the edit isn't showing that for Paige, it makes me feel like I don't know why I'm trying to take away your point. It's your point.
Is this because I took away your barbershop point? Is this what it is?
I'm like, well, I'm going to sit and argue with you then, Nick. But, yeah, no, I don't know. Well, that's obviously why we have different opinions then.
Look, I'm interested to hear what people say. So kind of like hit us up on Twitter and let us know, because I'd like to see where you guys come down on this.
Yeah, settle this argument, everyone out there.
And if not Paige, who else? Come on. Who else? Yeah. Fanella,
okay.
Maybe.
You get Paige.
Fanella, maybe. I don't know. Look, there was a bit of stuff about Zach, you know, the fact that, you know, he's trying to, he realizes he's in a bad position, and then I contemplated giving it to Zach, and I was like, no, I'm sorry. He has dead. I can't be doing that. So.
He's dead and gone.
Yeah.
I've noticed as well that he's just a bit mopey. Hey, he's just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that's just him being mopey rather than him owning his mistakes.
Yeah, probably. We've got a few questions that I want to get to, Sarah. And I put the call out on the Facebook, the Survivor Patron group. And there was a lot of questions for you, Sarah. There was a lot of questions, and rightly so, because you were a shining star last season, and a lot of people wanted to kind of reach out to you. So most of them were just blokes wanting to say how much they love you, ask if you're single. Tyler just wanted to say hi.
Awesome, amazing.
Yeah, Christopher wants to know if you're single. Basically, people just swooning over you. So. Let's get that out of the way.
This is the new Instagram DMs then, is it? Is this how?
You slide into the comments section, who'll then slide it into a podcast, and then you'll slide it to the, this is it.
Wow, that's jumping through a lot of hoops.
Slide into your DMs. I like it. So a couple of questions. So Nick Fishman says, what point in the game are we due for a swap?
I hope really bloody soon. I want your plan to happen and them to go with producer Nick Iodanza's plan of as soon as Tegan comes back into the game, let's shake it up.
Sounds good. I got a question here from Harry Collison, who is one of my old students, actually. So shout out to Harry. He's a great lad. He's got a question here, and he asks, do you think it's a little frustrating that basically all the challenges have been physical? It seems like this was potentially done to maybe be more weighted towards the Champions tribe.
Well, no. I'm going to say no. I think all the pre-merge challenges are physical. But if you've noticed, like, the boys aren't winning every single one. You know, the girls are still winning, like the contenders girls are still winning over the champions girls. So, no, I think there's just maybe a better skill set actually on the champions tribe rather than necessarily strength.
Because they do have a bit of everything. They've got the brains, you know, they've got Sam.
Totally. And,
you know, yeah,
and they're athletes and they work together as a team. I think it's like I don't think it's physicality that's necessarily, even though it's really helping, I do think it's skill as well.
They do seem older, you know, cooler heads prevail a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick Callahan wants to ask, what the hell did Paige do to get back onto Anita's good side? Because Anita was coming out of her skin at her at Tribal Council. So, you know, this kind of links to the Paige question that we're talking about. And, you know, it is good for her if she gets no airtime, because she does not need any more airtime than she got last week.
I know. Well, actually, I'm now just remembering. So Ben told Fenella and Shoni that, you know, they were going for Anita, right?
Yeah.
And then they went to Anita and basically said, oh, we've heard this. And Anita said, who? Oh, my God, who? What? And then she got all crazy and just, like, went 100% focused on that piece of information.
Okay.
So maybe it was that. Like, maybe she didn't expect to be being targeted. And as soon as she heard her name, whoever her enemy number one was, being that page, she was like, now, okay, let's mediate this. It's now Tegan.
Yeah.
So I think maybe it's to do with that rather than Paige necessarily doing anything specifically to kind of wiggle her way back in.
Gemma Stokes asked me, have you heard about questionable Benji's backstory and his claims about the books he's written? It sounds super dodgy. So we learned that Benji says he's a self-made millionaire who apparently has, you know, published
seven
books.
Times.
Yeah. Have you heard about this story? Because there was a news.com article about this, and I don't know if you've got any inside info, but what are your thoughts on Millionaire Benji, the, you know, best-selling author?
I'm calculating my political correctness here. I don't know. Like, I know, so I was friends with Annalise for a while, and I know that she said he was successful and he earned a lot of money. But I don't know. I'm going to let the internet, who are very good detectives, and I'm going to let them crunch the data, because truly I don't know. I actually don't really ask questions, because to me it does seem a bit like, oh, okay, I don't know. I don't see how that's happened.
Yeah.
But again, internet detectives, you work it out. I would rather just not ask questions and stay out of it.
Well, it's so some people, you know, there was actually a news.com article titled Australian Survivors Contestants $1 Million Secret. And this person who published this seems a bit skeptical about his books, and because his Amazon author page lists just one 52 page out of print paperback to his name or something like that.
Right.
Now, look, I hope he is a best-selling author. I hope he's, you know, made a lot of money, because that is so cool if it is. And, you know, the internet loves to kind of get in and kind of like do their fact checking. So you know, it's nothing against him, but if you are going to make those claims, there are going to be people out there who try to follow who try to follow them up. And, you know, the comment where he said I could make more money at home. Well, if you can make $500,000 in 50 days, what is your annual income? Like,
I was literally, when he said that as well, I was like, shit, maybe I should have stayed like to super tied in with the Wilsons if he's making that amount of money. But I don't know. I trust the internet for that, like you said.
Yeah. Well, look, I hope he's a best-selling author, because that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
What an awesome five facts about me.
Yeah. I've got another question here saying Jonathan Lilia says, good pick for the podcast, Nick, about you, obviously, but generally, how intimidating is Lydia? She's a beast. And then goes on to say Lydia has to be the merge brute, right? Because she's destined for an immunity run. Now, I just wanted, you know, we've got this traditional idea that the merge boot is this big kind of like, you know, someone who's going to win all the challenges, blah, 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 blah. That doesn't really seem to be the case in Australian Survivor. If you look at the merge boot in season one, that was Connor. And if you then look in the merge boot in season two, that was Jared. And these are two people who were no slouches in challenges, but they weren't considered, you know, huge physical threats. Do you think that's still a thing? And if so, do you think it'll be a thing this season?
I actually think it will be different this season just because of the nature of the kind of the difference between the two tribes. I feel like it might start to become a bit more of an individual game. And I do know, like, if Lydia is anything like Ziggy, who she is, she's a female tank of an Olympian, she'll definitely be on everyone's radars as like a very like get them out soon fear of an immunity run. And I think with what we're seeing is different about these dynamics, maybe, unfortunately, Lydia might be in danger. And she is getting a lot of airtime, so maybe they're trying to really wring that Lydia cloth and get as much Lydia as we can.
Wring that cloth.
And she really narrates the tribe over at Champion.
Yeah, she got some good stuff this week.
Yeah.
Yen asks, who in her opinion is playing the most Sarah-esque game? Love you, Sarah. Looking forward to your return on an All-Stars season.
I would have to say, okay, so if we're taking it over to contenders, I would say there was a Sarah-esque alliance, which was always my dream. That's what I wanted, but no one wanted. Everyone was friends out there, so I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'll be the middle person. So there's definitely that. And then on the other side, I reckon maybe even Shan. I feel like she's kind of friends with everyone. She's got a lot of options, and she can blend in with any group.
Adam Hogseth says, does Sarah have any thoughts on Monica?
You know, yes.
There's lots of similarities here. We've got, you know, two, you know, young, good-looking girls, you know, use their looks for their job. What have we got? So do you feel a kinship to Monica?
Well, when the cast was revealed, I was like, okay, this is my replacement. Please do us proud, but also please don't blow me entirely out the water because I will feel so replaced. I love her. I think she's really great. She's definitely playing a game that I didn't want to play, which was Under the Radar, because, you know, like maybe she's not a Survivor fan. Maybe she's like, okay, well, how do you get to the end? You play Under the Radar, then you start making moves. So I'm kind of, we're not getting a lot from her, and I do want her to kind of, I saw in her beginning interview strategy that she's not just a pretty face. She said that bloody line that I made sure I wanted to avoid saying because such a cliche. But I'm really hoping that she is just not a pretty face.
Mm.
But right now I'm seeing a lot of her pretty face, but they're not
really giving us much, are they?
No, unfortunately not.
Is it true that she's trying to steal your identity by wearing the exact same shirt that you wore in her promo pictures?
I know. I saw that and I was like, oh my God, I've got to make this joke before anyone else does and who wore it better. So I actually put it on my Instagram as well.
Yeah.
Get ahead of the joke. Yeah, I wonder if that was by fluke.
Just a couple more questions. This one's pretty interesting. Kieran Hadfield asked, did you have any particular strategies to socialize with the big egos in the game? King of the Jungle, Luke, Zen Hen, and could any of this be applied to Robbie and Zach? How do you deal with that? Because God knows I struggle.
Ego is one thing that in my industry I'm really good at stroking.
Okay.
It sounds super bad and I'm not that type of girl. I don't stroke anything other than ego, guys. Just putting it out there. I think there's a similarity there in that they feel like you know, all you need to do is say that they're great and they're like, oh, yeah, I really am great. Like, I'm super safe because I'm super great.
Is that simple?
Yeah, I have to say, I think with Henry it definitely was. I do think Luke, it was a little bit was that a jab? I'm genuinely, I'm like putting aside the fact that maybe we're not seeing each other anymore.
Did it take an hour and 33 minutes to get to a jab about it?
Putting all that aside, I genuinely do think that that was his downfall. He was a bit too, you know, overconfident with his position in the game, and that was definitely because me and Jerry basically were like, yeah, you're great, and we let him to believe that. Luke, a little bit, not really the same because, he got an ego as big as anything. But I think Luke still managed to separate himself.
Yeah.
But it is funny. I laughed when whoever it was, one of the girls was like, tell Zach he's doing great and that's all he needs. He'll do really well if you just say he's super strong. So yeah. I don't know. I don't know even if I answered that question.
No, I think that was pretty good. Last question, Sarah, last question. And this is probably, deals with something pretty serious and pretty important, so I needed to save it to last. Edmo asks, do you hope they do another charades challenge this season?
Oh my God, yes. I love it. I would love to say yes. Short answer, yes.
I still think that we are the most blessed people in the world to have witnessed the glory that is the Survivor AU charades challenge. And we're just not worthy. We are not worthy to see you pretend to be a lizard and a jellyfish. It's too good.
It was honestly so much fun. I mean, we won. So of course it was fun for me, but it was truly just, it kind of brought Survivor down to this almost cute childish level, which is actually a bit of a mental relief when a lot of the game is so adult and so grown up and so strategic that when it comes down to a game of just simple charades, oh my God, it was I guess one of my highlights. So yes, I would love to see the Olympians just bring their a high and mighty image down to just a little rooster and trying to be a chicken.
Commando being a dolphin is what we need right now.
Oh my God. Commando being a butterfly. Let's have it. Again,
Commando fly.
Nick and Sarah, let's call the producers now and be like, scrap whatever your idea is. We have a better one.
I think we've got a job. I think we have stumbled on a real good business here, forcing our way into the producer room of Survivor. So
yeah, we'll campaign it. The campaign starts today.
Well, Sarah, that takes us to the very end of our podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. I could talk to you for hours.
I could talk to you for hours.
Now, this was really good. You had some really great insights. I think people definitely get a bit more of a deeper insight into why you played the way you did and why you were such a great character to have last season. Hopefully, if the podcast continues in the future, that you would happily come on and chat again, because I know everyone loved hearing from you.
Oh, awesome. Well, I do have my sights set on Phoebe's,
title.
Three times now on the podcast.
Okay. All right.
So
well,
I'm only one behind. I need to catch up somehow. I'll do another one next week.
Okay. Exclusive content. We need a hashtag for people that made it to the end of the podcast. And I think that, look, we had a lot of great options here. We had, the Commando Fly was a late entry, producers Nick and Sarah was not very catchy, but definitely a good idea. But I think we cannot go past what you said I stumbled across and you just can't let go.
Yes, I'm so glad you're saying this one.
Hashtag teeth.
Woohoo! Hashtag teeth. Yes.
Very good. So
are we going to get lumped in with a lot of dentist ads though if we do hashtag teeth?
Well, I think how you spell it would be T-E-A-T-H and that'll help differentiate us.
Good thing to flag. Okay, hashtag teeth. Love it.
Where can people find you on social media, Sarah, and keep up with you? You're a bit of an Insta person.
Yeah, well, as all models are, and Insta is definitely my social media platform of choice. But I feel like you're a bit of a Twitter advocate, so maybe I need to get into that.
You really look. This podcast has a great history of getting people on Twitter. We got Dez, notably.
When
Purple Ben was in Adelaide, I got him on Twitter. Recently, I got Henry when he was at my house. So, Sarah, I think you are going to be the next person that we need to kind of get onto Twitter, because Survivor Twitter is where it's at. Instagram sucks. I hate Instagram so much.
Yeah, it does. For all this Survivor stuff, it definitely does. Okay, well, then you can be the little bird whisperer and set another little Twitter bird free, and I'll get a Twitter then.
Set a Twitter bird free. Very nice. Very poetic end to the podcast.
Oh, how lovely.
Well, guys, you can follow me on Twitter. Look, if you're not following me, what are you doing? Because that's where all the Survivor goss is. It's not about it. Look, Insta, I'm on Insta. I post, you know, cute stories of my dog and, you know, what my wife and I are getting up to. But Survivor stuff, it's all about Twitter. So at Nick Idanza, you, come join the conversation. And thank you again so much, guys, for joining. The feedback on the last couple of pods has been excellent. There's a lot of you guys are checking them out. And I want to just kind of flag who will be my guest next week, the great grandpappy of it all, Rob Cestanino, will be in here chatting with me about Australian Survivor. So very excited about that. Sarah, thank you so much. And
thank
we will
you,
speak
Nick.
To
it was
you
a pleasure.
Soon. Thanks, everyone. Take care. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.